Minnesota Vikings fans, welcome back to the Purple People Eaters podcast. He's Aaron, I'm Chris, and we're here to talk some good old-fashioned Vikings football, man. Wow. I mean, just sit back talking before we hit record. 5-1. I mean, 5-1, and the Packers are 3-3. But this is a great start. I would love the proof of somebody on their YouTube channel, someone on Twitter, someone called in to the Common Show. I don't know. I just want to hear thought the Vikings would be 5-1 at this point. I just want to hear it. 3-3, 4-2. Okay, you know, yeah, that's fair. If you look at the schedule, whatever. But 5-1, I don't think so. Anyway, so we're gonna start, you know, with the recap from this Dolphins victory. It was downright ugly at times. The defense and the punter basically won us the game. You know, the offense just did enough at certain times to get over the hump. But like we've been saying, a win is a win. And, hey, we were up 14 with like 3 minutes to go. That's a big win for us this year, and really since 2020. We'll talk about all the stats from 2020 in one-score games as we get through it. But the Vikes are 5-1. They got a bye. It feels great. It feels great, no doubt about it. So we're not gonna preview the next week or go too far in the second half of the season stuff. Really just gonna talk about this and of course, you know, close the show, unfortunately, with the back to back losses now from the Gophers. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But the defense was all over the place. Just hearing the stat 13 hits on the QB and it's not our QB is just refreshing. So we're going to dig all the way into this here victory that made the Vikes 5-1 in just a second. If this is your first time listening to the Purple People Eaters podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoperadio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Rope It Up and download the show there directly or listen to the browser. You can find it in a lot of different places. Under the Rope It Up Radio podcast platform, it's on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts. We also have the Spricker page, Living in Loserville, you should check out. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelytruth.com. And one more thing before we get into this Vikings victory. If you're thinking about cutting the cord or you have and you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called DirecTV Stream. It's the best of live TV and on-demand. There's no annual contracts, no hidden fees. You get to enjoy regional sports networks. And if you go with the Choice or Ultimate package, that gives you 3 free months, $160 value there. Showtime, Starz, Cinemax, and Epix. For a limited time only, the prices start as low as $49.99 for 2 months. That's DirecTV Stream. Okay. Like I said, we're going to go over each and every 3 and out. It won't take us long because there's only 3 plays to drive. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, let's bring in the co-host here, Aaron. We've been watching the Vikings for a long time. The last time we were even this good at the beginning of the season, anyway, record-wise, was 5-0 2016. That's when we went through like 7 tackles, and Bradford had no time to throw, and we ended up being 8-8 that year. Not trying to jinx us with that. Of course, we don't want to go too high on our horse either because we are Vikings fans, but what's going on, man? I mean, how the hell are you on this Monday night that all of a sudden it's pretty damn cold out?
It is pretty cold. It's shockingly cold. And I'm well, like you, just kind of scratching my head, wondering how we got to 5-1. But don't want to pick it apart too much because, you know, it's 5-1 and 3-0 in the division, and the Packers are struggling and, you know, all kinds of great things. And, you know, we kind of got tall poppy syndrome here. That means that we don't like to stick our heads up too high because we know how easily the knife can come down and cut your head off there. So, but it's looking good. I mean, you don't think everything's come together quite yet, but to be 5-1 going into the bye is astonishing, considering the fact that I don't think, like you mentioned earlier, anybody had any inkling of that it would be like this. You know, we got our butts whooped in Philadelphia, but turns out Philadelphia is pretty damn good. And we beat Green Bay. Turns out they're not as good as we thought they were, and probably not as good as they thought they were. So it's a surprise, but it's a pleasant surprise. And, you know, the way it was done in these close games where, you know, we're coming back in the fourth or we're just holding the lead in the fourth. It makes you think that there's more to it than just, you know, dumb blind luck, that actually, you know, there is a plan involved and they're working through this thing. And I think Thielen said today, it hasn't clicked yet, but when it does, it could be scary.
Yeah, we've seen shades on both sides, especially from the offense. Didn't see it too much. Speaking of shade, we weren't in the shade. In Miami, there's always that. It's just so funny how that works, like 20, 30 degrees more on that. Just so happens to be on that other side of the field. We still don't understand, but sorry, you're going to have to deal with it. It looks like the team that they have in place as far as, you know, helping the players out with rehab and just this whole sports science stuff, you know, in the sauna, in hot room, in the steam, I should say, starting Monday and Tuesday this week, a lot of players said that they were not forcing them, but saying, hey, do this. Start drinking water now every 15, 20 minutes instead of doing it Friday, Saturday night. I mean, they're just on their P's and Q's. We saw how they did it a little different when they went to London and how that worked. I mean, the staff and who they hired around it, it really is paying off right now overall. But we were lucky to be up 10-3 at half, bunch of three and outs, 10 punts on the day. 9 3 and outs, which is crazy. Now, you know, the defense, you definitely want to highlight them. The first game beyond game one where we can really just say, hey, this is the game that they won for us to go along with good old Ryan Wright and his 73-yard punt. But three turnovers, two of them, you know, picks, fumble recovery off of a strip, 8 tackles for loss, 6 sacks. Like I said earlier, 13 hits on the QB. I mean, golly, this was a great game by the defense, and we're going to really focus a bunch on them for a while on this show.
Yeah, I mean, Donatell was getting a lot of heat throughout the past weeks, really. And it's almost as if he, you know, dialed something up for this one. But I think really it's just the defense starting to kind of see where their strengths and weaknesses are. Obviously, we talked a little bit off mic about, you have the ends, you have the athletes, proven athletes with Neil Hunter and Zadarius, and now you've got a little bit of depth there at that position to get pressure. So if you weren't getting pressure, it had to go something with the system. And we know Donatell seems to be a system guy, and he's been telling us to be patient and it'll come together and all this stuff. And we're seeing passes go over the middle of the field and just can't stop anything. And then, you know, but it's still with the veterans we have, it's a lot of bend but don't break at this point. But to see the pressure that we actually got, I think Jones had a couple sacks. Daniil got one. Zadarius was all over the place with a couple sacks. And even the middle of that line was doing some pushing around. And so it was either, you know, Miami's offensive line wasn't that great. They did have a couple guys out. But, hey, that's not, you know, you play who's in front of you. And they played very well. And then add the turnovers to that, not only timely, but just turnovers themselves change games. And then to have, you know, the last game end on a turnover by Dantzler, it just seems like something's starting to come together here. And I'm not saying we're going to be a league best defense, but I really do think that Donatell's right in coaching patience and to just let this thing come together and gel a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we're taking, you know, a lot of folks that were in 4-3. They played a lot of times in college like that. They recruited that way to college. They were drafted 4-4-3. And some of these, like our depth at outside linebacker is ridiculous. Both those guys were defensive ends, and they seemed to fit great. I mean, Patrick Jones, you know, without DJ Wonnum, it's his time to step up and get plays off the bench. 2 sacks. Darius. I mean, Darius is just – this guy is just doing his thing. I mean, he's such a fun player, and he's obviously a lot more comfortable in this scenario because this is what he's done all his career, moving him, you know, all over the place and whatnot. It does kind of seem like talked about this off air too, that Hunter is getting double a lot. Sometimes he makes a move, gets by one, boom, there's another, not just like a random tailback or something, like literally two offensive linemen there. But Za'Darius, he had 11 pressures in the game. It's the second most of any player in a single game this year. 29 total pressures on the season, second most by any defender in the league. He's definitely, you know, living up to some of the stuff that he came in here with. If you look at Hicks and Kendricks, 11 tackles each. I mean, that's just tackle machine. 4 of 14 on third down. They were able to stuff the run. You know, they bent. They didn't break, but they bent a whole lot to a tune of like 385 passing. But in the end, they got two picks. One of them just bouncing around all over off helmets and everything. That was pretty crazy to like both Kendricks and Harrison just right there like scooping on both sides of the ball. That was just that was crazy. But it did have that kind of throwback feel to the defense. And here we are, you know, through six games, they're averaging – they're giving up about 20 points a game, 19.7 to be exact, which, you know, we've said all along, yeah, we do give up yards and all that stuff. We get it. But just points and key times in games, it's different than 2021 and 20. You know, it just is. And it hasn't been pretty all the time, but it hasn't been pretty the last 2 years. Hell no, as a team, but especially defensively, it's been horrendous. But everybody got in there. I mean, Jones had four pressures. Hunter had six pressures. Tomlinson had another three pressures. I mean, it was fun. It was a fun game to watch defensively. And another guy, you know, who's over the hill, Harrison Ford and Pat P, I mean, they're looking really good. And I'd have to say that's probably Pat P's best game as a Viking, because he was in it to win it.
Yeah, he was tested quite often, and I think he basically stood up pretty well to that testing. But another guy I wanted to bring up who was everywhere making plays all over the field, Cam Bynum, which was a bit of a surprise because he's pretty quiet back there. He kind of does his job, but he was everywhere there was a play made. He was there. I think he was there on the Waddle fumble. He was there. Play in particular, I believe it was a fourth quarter play. It was a long pass, and he had to come from the middle of the field all the way to the sideline to break up a pass to, I think, the tight end. I'm pretty sure it was the tight end. Anyways, a great play. I think maybe he missed his assignment and caught up with it, but he was everywhere too. And, you know, I didn't really think much of him until that game. And I think he's really coming into his own there, which we need because our safety depth right now is not the greatest. And I thought he played a really good game. And Cam as well. I just think overall defensively, it's kind of coming together. And like, I don't know. I have to learn more about the 3-4 and the subtleties of it because I've been watching 4-3 since, I think, what, the 75 when the Vikings started running it. So it's like, you know, it's a new thing for all of us. And I think maybe we're all sort of getting used to what that is. But, you know, to get production from the front line, I think that's where it stems. And then everything kind of falls off of that. And to get the pressure you need makes it tough on quarterbacks. And then, you know, they don't have the time that they need to get the ball, and that helps your defensive backs. And it all kind of comes together. I thought Harrison Smith, again, a great game. Kendrickson, Hicks, well, I thought Asamoah was in there as well. And it just seems like you've got players, you got the system, they're starting to get it figured out. And the thing is, Chris, we're six games in, we're going into a bye. They'll self-scout. I mean, you're not going to peak till week 10, you know, something like that. So, and there's just room to improve, and to be still improving in 5-1 is just puts you in a position to really make this season exciting.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's just, you know, they are really starting to come together, like you said, and we gotta let it happen. I know it's tough sometimes, and we were spoiled for like five straight years with those Zimmer defenses, so we know what it looks like. Maybe not from the, you know, 3-4, like you pointed out, but just in general, as far as, you know, a dominant defensive unit making Hall of Fame quarterbacks, you know, look just pretty good. or really bad at times and have to chuck it up and all that. So I'm just happy, man. I'm really happy. And you know, they're giving up a lot of pass. They're giving up a lot of yards. I do get that. I mean, we got to see how that goes. But as far as the rush now, and that's something that we're giving up a whole lot early in the season. Now it's been, and we kind of documented this a little bit, especially yards per carry. But Miami came into this game running for a lot of yards, and we held them to 73 yards on 20 carries, 3.7 a carry. And now we're the last four games during this four-game winning streak under 4, 3.8 a carry. So it is starting to come around. They're getting better on defense as well. And just to add this, you know, when the Dolphins, they had pretty much, you know, Xavier Howard back. That was huge. I didn't think he was going to play at the beginning of the week, last week. They basically, beyond that Jones guy who might not come back for another couple of weeks, this is about as healthy as they've been on defense. And when they've been healthy, two games they had at home, I think the Patriots could only score 7 points, and even the Bills only scored 19 points in that game. So, you know, if you put it all in perspective, it's like, all right, dude, this defense is really starting to come around. They're going to have their ups. They're going to have their downs. But I do like what I see. Patrick Peterson, you know, he's been kind of going at PFF because they'll say, oh, he gave up 3 catches for, you know, 46 yards or whatever. And he'd be like, I only gave up 2. I was helping out. I came late to a guy. That's not even my guy. He's been kind of going at him. A lot of corners do based off that. But he allowed 3 catches on 6 targets, 36 yards, had 2 pass breakups, 3 tackles, and a pick. I mean, Patrick Peterson is playing his ass off. And especially if you look at, you know, what he makes per year, that's pretty damn good. And if you look at it, those 6 sacks, it's the first time, this is Dustin Baker, good follow, like I always say, it's the first time the Vikings have, in a meaningful game anyway, had 6 sacks since 2018 against the Bears. Well, they had 7 sacks. I'm sorry, I read it wrong. They had 7 sacks in that Week 18 against the Bears. That didn't mean as much. But the last time, actually, it was against the Dolphins. Week 15, 2018, last time they got 6 sacks. So, I mean, it just feels good. It really does. On to the offense. Well, let's stop at special teams. 15 punts inside the 20 for Ryan Wright. He had 10 punts. Of course, we know that big 73-yard punt, which came anytime. Well, I suppose 73-yard punt isn't good anytime because, you know, if you're at midfield, that's not a good punt, right? But when you're in your end zone, I mean, that was such a boost, and it is kind of like complimentary football. We're going to play ugly for a while, but we are going to compliment you at some point, and so that was big. But any other defensive items before we do go to the other side of the ball? Because it was a rough one, no doubt about it, on the offensive side.
I mean, you held Tyreek Hill in as well as I think you can hold Tyreek Hill. Which was a team effort there. And that punt you said, that 73-yarder was just kept going and going and going and flipped the field. And that's huge, just particularly when you're in a 3-0 game at that time, or might have been 7-3 at that time. I'm not sure, but you're in a tight game and you're pinned down. I mean, you can't ask for more than a 73-yard punt. And so that was a huge play. And he just consistently does that. And we wonder, well, you know, why we cut the other punter in training camp, but now I guess I can see why this guy has been making plays with his feet. So yeah, special teams played well. You know, I think the tackling's improved in special teams, and I don't know what the special team schemes are, but I know that they seem to do the job that needs to be done. It might, you know, Rager could maybe break something at some point, but it's even, you know, more difficult to break punts nowadays than it used to be. So yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Defensively, I think we pretty much talked about everything. Keep getting the pressure. We're going to need some depth, I think, in the defensive line. But I thought Lynch even played well, and you know, it all feeds off of that. And you've got some good athletes up there. I think it's just a matter of time until you're somewhat dominant. I don't know if you're ever going to get, you know, to the point with what you have to be top 5 or top 10 like we talked about last week. But you're going to be above average, you would think, with continued improvement.
Yeah, and as far as offensively, 2-12 on third down, coming off of that 15 out of 18 on third down, 9 3-and-outs. That's right, count them, 9 3-and-outs. Now, they had like 5-2, I suppose, but still, that's a lot of 3-and-outs. Defense played good, no doubt, on their side, but damn, that's a lot. 10 punts. We just could not establish the run whatsoever until that big run by Cookie. Couldn't protect all that well. It seemed like there was maybe 4 or 5 plays that we could have picked up a first down if we had more separation, if there wasn't a drop, if there wasn't a high ball thrown. Just couldn't quite, you know, get it together to make enough plays to really open up this game. But, you know, when push came to shove, they did make plays they needed to make. Cook had that big run in a crucial part of the game. Justin Jefferson, probably the quietest 100-yard game he's going to have. And, you know, it was that big play, that throw that they love, him and, you know, Cousins. It's like Coach KO was saying, you know, we're kind of hunting that play because we're looking for it every week. And they found it, and usually it doesn't have that much run after the catch. I don't know where that safety was, but that was that really kind of made me feel better about, okay, we're moving the ball, we're in scoring range. We were technically 2 of 3 in the red zone, but kind of 2 and 2 because that red zone, one of the failures in the red zone as a field goal was when we only had like 18 seconds left in the second quarter. So, we technically got into the red zone, but we didn't have – you know, 3 shots at it. You know what I mean? So that we only took like 1 shot at it. We were getting into field goal range. Once again, being aggressive at the end of second quarter, I should say. But to be up 10-3, in some ways I thought, you know what? We're going to find a way. But, yeah, I'd say the protection, well, we said it too. Bradberry finally had one of those games that kind of reminded me of Philly and, of course, like the last 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, he was – I remember one time specifically ended up in Cousins' lap, and then there was a few times he was pushed back. He was going up against, I think, Christian Wilkins, who had a nice game. But everything seemed sort of stagnant in that first quarter where he couldn't really move the ball. They were loading the box. He couldn't get Cook anything. And I think they maybe went in with a game plan of trying to get Cook off first. And it just didn't work out at all. And then somewhere in that mid-second quarter, it seemed like an adjustment was made and things started to loosen up a little bit. It started with a pass to Jefferson, I think, off to the left side. And then it just seemed like they started to get in a rhythm and started to produce. Cook would get, you know, 3, 4, 5, and then you'd – Thielen got involved and Irv Smith a little bit and Johnny Mundt, and you're starting to move the ball a little bit after a really stagnant first quarter. And that's when the ball started rolling downhill offensively. And I just don't think Miami ever really adjusted back to your adjustments. And I really just think they loaded the box mostly and were determined to stop Cook. And they did a good job of it until we found our passing game a little later in the second quarter. And from then on, I think offense wasn't a shining example of offense, but it was adequate enough to move the chains and get down the field.
Yes, adequate enough. That's exactly what they were in this game. Adequate enough that they are clearly, throughout most of the games, trying to take away our deep ball. You could just tell just watching the game, but also the average completion and all that. Now we are, it seems like, better this year of the catch and run, yards after catch, because that's what's open. So, you know, but to, considering, you know, the Dolphins ran 23 more plays than the Vikings, and they were on the field for 10 more minutes, so, which really shows you how good the defense was to be on that field that long. But back to the Bears, here's a stat from Will Ragatz, that 458-235 was we were outgained Just the second time ever that the Vikings have won a game with less than 240 yards and given up over 450 yards. In December 1988, the Vikings beat the Bears 28-27, despite being outgained 465-218. Wow, that's pretty freaking crazy. This is Dustin Baker again. Before yesterday, the Vikings were 9-27 during the last decade in games where they lost the time of possession battle by 10 minutes. So, you know, this is what you do. This is how you do it. Some positives on the line. Kristen Darrisaw hasn't allowed a sack in 9 straight games dating back to last year. Obviously, I think 15 or something like that. I mean, this guy is just really putting it together. And much like the defense, you know, we know the stars, we know the names, and we've seen this last couple of years of our offense being pretty damn good. But we still got to remember, we came into this game. Shit, we threw it 30 times, and look how many times we even had the ball, you know? We came into this week 6th in attempts for passing. And how many times have we had 3 and 4 wide receivers comparatively to the last 3 years? So it is a new system. It definitely is a new system. You could still see some quirks and just not quite all together. And now, even like Coach KO just said in his presser today, like, we've seen defenses do so much to us that we didn't even think they'd do, and they've never even showed it on film, which can only add up. To seeing, you know, once it's great to put out stuff on film, but when you see it like that, and then you were able to make the adjustment, like you said, that can only mean, you know, great things. And for him to be striving for certain things and to keep a wide receiver like Jefferson saying, hey, man, we're going to target you. You know, just give me a couple more plays. We're going to get to you. And it's really working out. And, you know, wide receivers want the ball. And when you're a stud, you should get the ball. And so, I just like that vibe, and he's willing to be like, you know, it took me like 2.5 quarters to get the ball to him, and that's my bad. And, you know, so, I mean, this guy, he's 5-1 through 6 games as a first-year coach. Only Dennis Green had a 5-1 record. Jerry Burns had a 4-2. Good old Les Steckel, 2-4. 2-4 for that season? What, they went 3 games? That's actually a good start. I got to give him credit for that. But Dalvin Cook, that was the longest touchdown run since November 8th, 2020. That's freaking crazy. Yeah, we got to improve in the third quarters. We know that. But it's now, what, 27 or 28 of these damn one-score games since 2020. 6-8 last year on them. This year, 4-0. Yeah, something's got to give. If you're in these tight games, we know we're going to lose some of these. So brace yourself. But all in all, man, it feels good. I got it. It feels good.
It does. And it's balance, you know, is what you're looking for offensively. And that run by Cook is just going to go on tape and help you immensely for the future of breaking runs and also freeing up the receivers. And, you know, Thielen emerging again as a red zone threat was another big thing where, you know, he was – there last year caught a lot of touchdowns in the red zone, and to catch 2 more, he's like, okay, now that's getting back on track. And KJ working into somewhat of a possession type role, more or less. And then, you know, they're going to do what they want to do to Jefferson, and he's just going to have to deal with doubles and brackets and all that stuff all season. But, you know, that's not going to last forever if Thielen can continue to win in the red zone, win on third down, et cetera, and KJ as well. They're going to have to find different ways, and I just don't think they've invented a way to stop 3 receivers yet. And so I'm not saying that KJ's in that class yet, but I think he's adequate enough to use that word again and to get the chains moving and to keep the offense rolling. And Kirk seems to be able to have the ability to check in and out of plays, which is nice, and Dalvin to get on track. At some point, you know, offensively, there's just going to be a throw your hands in the air with defensive coordinators of what to do with it. Now, obviously, if you can continue to get pressure up the middle, that's going to be a problem for our offense. We've got to find a way to shore that up. And Bradberry, for the most part this year, has been good enough. But he hasn't faced – when he faces those guys, Chris, the Wilkins, the the Hicks, the guys that historically give him problem, the big aggressive defensive linemen that know what they're coming after, with him. He's just getting bull rushed and he's got to find a way to get around there. They've got to find a way to help him. And I just don't think you can help a center much. A guard has his responsibility. He doesn't want to be stuck trying to bail out a center all the time. And, you know, Ingram seems to be holding their own. So I think that's really the thing, the Achilles heel, if you will, to an offense that's just being close to unstoppable. I'm not going to say you're the, you know, the greatest show on turf like the Rams, but you've got an ability to be a very potent offense, even more than you are right now, if we can just find a way to keep the pressure up the middle from wrecking it all. And I think they've done a pretty decent job of that. And I think, you know, being able to run the ball helps a lot there too. And I think just getting Cook off on that run, you know, will set a lot of precedent for what's to come. Now, you know, Kirk has improved. Whatever he's done, it's almost hard to talk about because you just don't know what it is, but whatever it is, I like it. And that makes me happy too, because I feel like he's taken a little more ownership in this offense, which has allowed the offense to be a little bit more successful. And it all kind of feeds into each other, as we've talked about many times. And as long as you keep Jefferson happy with some targets, have Thielen happy with some red zone targets, you know, KJ not getting bored out there, and Cook getting the carries and getting some yards, it's just really tough to see it anything really getting in the way offensively for the rest of the season, barring injuries. And even that, I think you have some depth there. So I'm excited to see what's coming.
Yeah, as am I. It's the four game winning streak that we got. It's the 2019 is the last time we won four straight games. I don't think that stat's right. I just thought about that, because didn't we win four games when we were like 1-5? Maybe it was only three. I don't know. I remember taking.
I think I know what year you're talking about. It was. No,
it was 2020. We were 1-5 in the play, yep. And then we got back in the playoff hunt. And I could have sworn we won four straight.
Maybe it was two, a loss, and then two. I don't That's remember. What it was. Yeah, something like that. But yeah, I remember that year.
Probably what it was. Overall, Vikings in good shape. Like you said, as far as like what we got to work on, individual players, looking at the schedule. You know, you got 11 games left. You know what? That's what blows you. That's what blows you away when you start to think. Hey, there's six games. There's 11 games. You don't have to do, 6-5, you know what I mean? You do the math on that, you know what I mean? It's pretty, I don't want to jump too deep into that even next week, but we are going to take a look at the schedule. We are going to see where we're at, coming up the bye and all that. So that'll be kind of, instead of recapping a game, it's what we do every year, we'll kind of do the bye week for us, kind of taking a look at where we've been and where we're going at 5-1. Any last words, though, sir, before we, unfortunately get into this Gopher segment and then eventually shut this puppy down?
Like any other Vikings fan, the little, reservation I have with getting too excited is the fact that that guy, he keeps missing extra points and he keeps missing kicks. Now, I'm not saying he has to make 100% of his kicks or 100% of his extra points. But, you know, that pit we all get in our stomach when you miss an extra point is just, it's not something we want to revisit every week. And it seems like every week there's either a missed 20 to 30 yarder or an extra point. And, you know, that to me is still something that's kind of hanging over our heads that needs to be dealt with. And from the look of facial expressions of O'Connor on the sideline and the things he says, you can kind of read his lips. He's not real happy about it either. And I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't want to say that's going to be a kicking change or anything like that, because I think he's trying to build confidence in him. But,
right.
You know, I'm just getting sick of that, you know, jagged number of, okay, well, we missed an extra point, and now we got to go for two or whatever it is. We've got to fix the extra point situation, and as well as the field goal consistency.
Yeah. No doubt about it. And, man, when I look at Miami just in general, when they get Tua back and some of the, you know, what they were doing earlier when they're 3-0, he'll have like he was in like a boot midweek. He had 12 catches, buck 77. Waddle. I mean, those two, the speed on both of those guys, it's just nuts. And then they got that Gesicki or whatever that dude's name is. I mean, they're and that defense is pretty solid as we saw. I mean that's a good squad. So closing out the show, back-to-back losses for our beloved Gopher program. You know how folks have been not afraid of fourth down with the Vikings defense? I mean, there was a time where I think it was 4 of 4 on fourth down, Chase Brown. That sucked, like, really bad. It was like, oh, wow, we're getting beat. But this one kind of felt like, I mean, there's a moment in this game where it's 20-14, end of the third quarter, and they're only down by, 6 points. But Illinois had 64 plays compared to 31 at that time. I mean, just to be in that game was nuts. And we just couldn't get over the hump, offensively speaking. Tanner Morgan, I know he got hurt. I'm not trying to down him when he got hurt because I know he got hit. Did take a hit to the head. Now, college football calls it more like old school football than, compared to the NFL, where if you have bad breath and it gets into even the ear of Tom Brady, it might be a problem. But just disappointing on offense. I mean, I do think some of it has to do with not having their number one wide receiver and the trust factor. Morgan, it kind of feels like 2018 where our offense was moving and our defense was garbage. Right now, these last 2 weeks, especially this last week, because I really felt like we were like 3 to 5 plays away from Minnesota messing up against Purdue. They should have won that game. This one, yeah, the score and all that, it was definitely winnable, but it just didn't feel like we were going to win the game. And if it wasn't for that long run by Mo and that long kickoff that set up a score, it could have even been uglier. But it was a rough one. Illinois on the up and up. It's funny because you were highlighting Illinois. I was highlighting Purdue. But we both said these next two games, after a big win, being 4-0 and all that, well, it was really going to see where we're at in this season. And now we got to go on the road to Penn State. But, yeah, that was disappointing loss, to say the least, in that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, see where we're at. Well, where are we? I mean, that's the question I have to ask is where are we here? Morgan has been with this program for a very long time, we all know, and I'm sure he's great on the leadership council, and he's great with, saying elite and all the catchphrases, and we all know that he changed his recruitment plan and followed Fleck here and all the wonderful stuff here, but
he's a great human being.
He's a great human being, and that's all well and good, but I'm not going to sit here and trash him because he's done a heck of a lot. I think one day we'll look back at him and say, that was a big part of the program there and a stabilizer, but now we're trying to make that next step. And we thought we had made that next step after the Michigan State win. But like you said, we kind of pinpointed these games, and Bielema, that's the one that gets me because he just seems to have Flex number. He just knows how to beat this team. And with Shiraka, without Shiraka, it doesn't matter. He knows how to beat this team. And so I knew that would be a difficult test. But nonetheless, with Morgan, it's the balls that he's throwing. And I just kind of noticed as I was watching that game, and I told you, Chris, off mic, that he never throws a ball besides a slant pass that the receiver doesn't have to struggle to catch. And sometimes it's more of a struggle than others, but it's just never accurate. It's always inconsistent. It's always, jump up and grab it, or reach back and grab it, or, it's just never in stride, rarely in stride. I think I remember a few passes to Bateman where he caught him in stride, but that seems to be the issue there. And, Mo's going to get his. He had over 100 yards again, but, how many carries you're going to give him? And I think the real overall theme of that game is that's what happens when eating the clock and running the ball goes wrong. That's when it's not working. That's how it goes. And I think that's what the game looks like in the situation where that system isn't working. And the Fleck is really stuck on that, gets it from Tressel. That's how they want to approach offense. And you're not bereft of offensive athletes, although I think Michael Brown Stevens could fight a little harder for the ball sometimes. He seems to be a body catcher. And these are just little nitpicks here. But nonetheless, you've lost two games where you could have won. And that drastically changes your season. And now, Chris, we're heading into a whiteout at Penn State, which we were excited to see had we won these two games. And now I just don't know what this team is. I know defensively we're pretty strong. And we're not giving up a massive amount of points. But offensively, again, we're in this stagnated place where we can't score enough. And against, you know, Sisters of the Poor, we can score 45 points. But against Purdue, against Illinois, we're not a good enough offense to put up 30, to put up 28 even. And that's a problem. And Penn State can do that to you. They played all right for a half against Michigan. So they're not, you know, the big, you know, boogeyman at this point. They're a beatable team. But just going into that game, it's like, well, where are we and what are we, particularly offensively? And, you know, I got to thinking while I was watching the game again, sorry to go on and rant, but the changes in the offensive line are a little bit of a thing here. I don't think we're as a strong offensive line as we were last year, which is fine. You're going to have turnover.
Yeah.
But – you know, that's a part that needs to improve. And it's just, you know, and now you look at the guy who's backing up Morgan Chris, and, you know, I know he got thrown to the wolves, but he didn't seem to be a world beater in the possessions that he had. And so you're looking, okay, he lost a couple quarterbacks to transfer, Anixted, who's doing all right. I think I saw a little bit of highlights of him wherever he ended up. And then the Jacob Clark kid, which I don't know where he ended up, but you have Kramer now and the Calic Manis kid. And it's like, okay, well, what is the direction and why are we clinging to Morgan so tightly? And are we going to get a chance now to see what life after Morgan might look like, depending on his concussion situation? And it just kind of puts you in a, you know, you don't know what you are going into Penn State, where I think after the Michigan State win, we thought we knew what we were.
Yeah. I mean, 27 to 12 on first downs, giving up. And then you're right about the points. They gave up 472 yards, but they only gave up 26 points. It was the passing, and that was the big thing. We kept wondering, like, I took the 6.5 because it was like, why is Illinois down? You know, they're at home. They're hot. They're coming in 5-1. What the hell are they, a 6.5-point underdog? Did a little bit more research. Found out Danny DeVito's kid. No, I'm just kidding. But DeVito, that he was hurt, and I didn't know he had gotten knocked out of that Illinois game, or the Iowa game, and I'm like, oh, okay. But then, boom, he comes back, and not just comes back, you know, 25 of 32. I mean, it's just, that's all you need. 4 of 12 for 21 yards and a pick, that's Morgan. I mean, overall, 38 yards passing, and you know, we got done to what gets done to us, or, you know, to what we do to people. Like you said, dude, 40 minutes and 4 seconds. We didn't even have the ball for 20 freaking minutes. I mean, that was rough. That was really rough, and we turned the ball over 3 times. Just had no business winning that game, unfortunately, even though it was there. I mean, at one point, it was 14 to 13 at the beginning of the second half. They scored, got up, and then gave up a touchdown, and then couldn't do anything. It was definitely frustrating. And the funny thing about this Penn State game is this will be the random game, the coming in loosey-goosey, sorry, Common, you know, no pressure at all, you know, that it's going to be tough to win the, you know, Big Ten West now, which is still wide open, really. Maybe not for us, but it is in general. And I'll tell you what, it's a 4.5-point underdog. The Gophers are, which kind of tells me that Morgan's going to play. But still, like, I wouldn't be shocked if they turned right around and won this fucking game. I just wouldn't. And it'd be a ranked team, and all of a sudden, you know, college football could just play like this, especially college sports in general. And, you know, unfortunately, they give up a bunch of a fair amount of passing. So we need to take advantage of that, whether it's the middle of the field, the deep, you know, play action, whatever. They give up the run as well. I tell you what, it's kind of funny. You know, at the beginning of the year, and even when we were 4-0, I would have given this in the L column, right? I definitely would have. But I'm starting to look at it as like, you know what? I bet you they freaking turn around and bite us in the ass and just do the Minnesota thing. And, oh, yeah, we won this one, no problem, though. Whiteout, no problem. But the whole whiteout thing at night, 6:30 kickoff, that is a lot to overcome. And they're going to be pissed off, too. They were leading at half and then just got steamrolled on the ground. Clearly they can get steamrolled on the ground. We're not Michigan, but we can run the ball. But it's funny. I really think that this is a close game. And like I said, coming off what we just came off of, we're only 4.5-point underdogs on the road. It's kind of crazy like that.
God damn, I hear you, man. I do. And it does smell of a game where they just come up and they just, you know, play one heck of a game and surprise everybody and win. And I don't think it's too far out of the realm of possibility. I mean, we have the component parts. You have Mo, who can have a great game. Tanner can rise to some occasions. You have Dalen Wright. You have the Jackson kid. I mean, those are quality Big Ten receivers. And the offensive line is, you know, it's not the worst. It's still a Big Ten offensive line. And, you know, Fleck teams tend to rise to these situations. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if they come away with a win in Penn State. I just think that, you know, are you asking me to put that on the record? I can't do that. I think the spread is just about where it's going to end up. I don't think they're going to get embarrassed, but I don't think they're going to win this one. But if they come out with a 3-point win or a 7-point win, Chris, is that going to shock me? No, it's not at all. It's right with the brand, you know? But then, you know, it's almost disappointing because you're like, well, what about Purdue? What about Illinois? And what would have been had you done that? And like you said, if they had won those two games, you'd probably chalk this up as an L, no problem. Because I think we both did in the beginning of the season. So, I mean, my pick, I guess, I'm going to pick Penn State. I think the spread's just about right, about 4. I think it's going to be low scoring in the first half. It'll break open in the second. And we'll lose 7 points probably. But, I mean, that could be reversed so quickly that it just depends on how the Gophers come out. And then, again, you're caught with the problem of just not knowing – I won't say this team's identity because we kind of have that wrapped up in culture and all that stuff. But, you know, would that put them back on track for the Big Ten West and for the pollsters or whatever, even though they're not as important now, but put them back on the map, let's say, if they get a win in Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would. The problem is the only 3-1, you know, there's 2 3-1 teams, and that just so happens to be Illinois and Purdue, right? So it's like, ooh, that kind of sucks. Who do they got to play? How many teams, you know, how many big matchups they have? And obviously someone's going to lose between Illinois and Iowa, but Purdue, when you look at their schedule remaining, it's pretty favorable, but sometimes you can get lost in kind of like I mentioned the ACC Postal, because it plays out almost every year like this, where you're like, oh, this team's got it. Oh, wait, hold on. Oh, they lost to that team? So, but I'm with you. I picking-wise, I will be picking. I'm with you there. I will be picking Penn State, unfortunately. Now, Illinois does have a game at Michigan as well. It's actually Purdue and then at Michigan. So we'll see, but yeah. I'll tell you what, man. I wouldn't be shocked if they won this. I'm right there. Penn State in a competitive game that they just fall short. Any last words? I mean, Gopher related. I mean, you can fill in the people about the big basketball recruit that our Gopher squad just got. Living in Loserville, that'll be in, you know, hopefully in February. Right? That means the Vikings are going deep when we talk Timberwolves and Gopher basketball. But any last words or, you know, like I said, maybe we can talk real quick about our guy Ben Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, just a precursor, you made me aware of the fact that they landed a big recruit, and I'll let you talk a little bit more about it, but 7-1 looks good. High national recruit. I can't remember, Chris, besides maybe Chris Humphreys back in the day, us landing a recruit like that. And so that's a big deal for him in that program, and obviously the Wolves are slated to have a heck of a season. So, you know, it looks as if they're going to, and so that'll be an interesting season of living in Loserville.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It is. It matters which, you know, rivals or this or that, but yeah, that is the biggest. Someone has them as a 5-star, and that was since 2003, Chris Humphreys. Kansas was after him. Florida State, who always does good with bigs, was after him. Texas. And then TCU, who is coming up in the world of college basketball of late. But it basically, this Monday, it came down to two teams. And, you know, we've been in a bunch of top fives, man. I mean, the top five, we can get in the top fives all day. Tino was in the top five, you know, for a bunch of guys. But this dude seems like the real deal. And he picked Minnesota, man. And you look at, like, Gopher Hoops. Their out-of-state prospect, it's the biggest prospect since Courtney James in 1995. In-state, in the past 14 seasons, 2009, Royce White. This is someone, what is the worst one? 61, you said? ESPN, otherwise 27th, 13th, 16th, 28th, kind of all over the place with this big guy, but it's really, it tells you how good of a recruiter Ben Johnson is, and that's what he came in as. He got a raw deal coming in here, not being an experienced coach. And so when he got signed, you know, the team jet. And it is what it is. When you don't have any experience as a head coach, that's going to happen at most programs, especially with the transfer portal now. So it was no bad look at Johnson. We just felt bad for him. It's like, dude, like 11 guys left or whatever. He did what he could do last year with what he was given. The recruiting is going really, really good. And he's still a realist of like, well, if we don't get the top Minnesota guy because he goes to Duke or North Carolina or whatever, like, is it really the end of the world? It's not. Let's keep recruiting. Let's get the right fit. And the guy, but this recruiting class that he's got coming in this year, and now obviously with this Evans, it's looking up.
It says
what's going to come next.
Kid by the name of Dennis Evans, 7'1", averaged 11 points, 10 rebounds, 7 blocks per game as a junior at Riverside Hillcrest in California, is rated 13th nationally in the class of 2023 by Rivals, 27th by 247 Sports, 28th by Prep Hoops, 61st by ESPN, and 35th by On3. So, I mean, if you average those rankings, you're probably 25, something like that. So it's a big deal, and it's a big get, and it's a big kid. So everything that they need and to improve that program, and like you said, I think it's headed in the right direction. I think it's being built with recruiting and how do you say that word? I just lost it, but development. And so that's, you know, it's not just Patina was kind of like, I'll get a kid from New York and it'll change things. No, but this is recruiting and development. I think that's the way you build a sustainable program here at Minnesota.
Yeah, it'd be great, man, if this works out. His X's and O's. Seems like he can definitely relate to the kids, but also could tell them, hey, man, this is how we want you to play. I'm looking for, like, the right fit. And so far, on paper, it really looks like doing it recruiting. Anyway, we'll be back next Monday. Vikings-wise, we do get to sit. That's the thing about football, man. If you come off a bad loss, you got a whole week, you know, to sit there and be like, ugh. Or you got a whole week to feel pretty good. We got a full 2 weeks to feel pretty good. And it's funny because I always say maybe by the time we got maybe in our 30s or 35-ish, I always be like, you know, I just want the 2-week break between the conference final and the Super Bowl. I just want those 2 weeks of feeling great, something we've never felt since we've been alive as the Vikings going to the Super Bowl. Just to get that 2-week thing, dude. Well, this is a very minor look at that, but 2 weeks to sit back, and relax, because, you know, we're going to have a bunch of more. We'll be back next Monday. Hopefully we're talking about a huge upset, and someone gets upset between Illinois and Purdue, and we're right back in the race for the Gophers. Anyway, we'll be back next Monday. Peace.